Hello there, you're welcome to another interesting edition of Sports Africana, where we bring you the most interesting of sporting activities, particularly from an African perspective. We'll talk more about football generally. And we're in the season of the World Cup. The African World Cup qualifiers have come and gone. The countries that qualified has emerged. And of course, the one that is of interest to us today is Nigeria and Ghana. Nigeria lost out on the qualification ticket. Wow. Well, to talk about this with me today, I've got two gentlemen who have they've been on the show before, and they'll be talking about the AFCON qualifiers, the Nigerian getting ousted. Quite a tragedy. But we're just going to be looking at the various issues, what happened ensuing into that game. My name is Opa Adeola, and as you all know, you can always listen to all our episodes, the time passed on the Sport Podcast. It's nice to have Dafe Otite and Bolaji Douglas. Dafe, it's nice to have you.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
And Bolaji, thanks for joining us anytime we call upon you.
Always a pleasure. Good to be here once again.
Right. Nigeria, Ghana. Well, let's backtrack a little bit. How did we get to where we are? How did we get to the point where we lost out? Dafe, the floor is yours.
Quite simply, a failure to plan, planning to fail. When we look at our Super Eagles' way of play, we are very one-dimensional. There are two issues here. Number one, we got rid of our coach without a plan to replace him. So we got rid of Gernot Rohr. Yes, some people have said he should have gone a long time ago. Some said he shouldn't have had his contract renewed. But the fact is, when he first came in, we had like the new coach bounce where results came in really well. And we did very well until we got to the World Cup where things started plateauing. And then after AFCON 2019, they started going down. Now, why didn't we qualify for the World Cup? It's basically because the Super Eagles have become predictable. The Super Eagles have one system of playing and are unable to change their tactics or strategies, depending on what's happening on the pitch. Algeria, during AFCON 2019, they executed a game plan to stop Nigeria, and it worked perfectly for them. That was where we lost in the semifinals. Getting to the third place match, we beat Tunisia. But Tunisia then went back to the drawing board, looked to see what Algeria did to stop us getting into the finals. They practiced those tactics during our friendlies between AFCON 2019 and AFCON 2022. And by the time we got to AFCON 2022, they executed that game plan and it worked perfectly for them. Unfortunately for us, we then went to Ghana and Ghana executed the same game plan. We basically play from the wings. We play fast, play from the wings, clip our wings. We cannot go through the middle. We don't have a plan B. We don't have a plan C. So basically, the two reasons we did not qualify for the World Cup, one is our being very, very predictable on the pitch. And number two is because we got rid of our coach. We had no plan to replace him. We brought our technical director from upstairs, whose best performances were 15 years ago. And he was beaten fairly and squarely by the tactical team of the Ghanaian side. Not that the Ghanaians had better footballers than us, but they had a better bench, a better technical crew than it.
Right. Olaji, from your perspective, there's been the issue of the technical crew. Some were of the opinion, I mean, going back to Kenneth Rohr, for example, some were of the opinion that he ought to have been sacked, rightfully so. And some were of the opinion that they should have allowed him to complete what he started. They brought in Augustine Egbuakwon, and taking into account the AFCON leading to this World Cup qualifier, what was your general impression of the whole situation? Should he have been sacked, or was it right that they made that call? Your opinion?
We need to go back a little bit. First thing is, we need to ask ourselves the questions. Does he deserve to be sacked? The answer is an emphatic yes. People will say, oh, but he was meeting, ticking the boxes. He was ticking the boxes, but the performance was going down and down. And we got to that point. Even those who wanted, we need to remember, the organization didn't want to sack him because of the financial implications involved. So for them to decide to pull up the plug, they got to their wit's end. The performance on the field was dire. We could no longer recognize the team that was coming out. When we play home games, we have our heart in our mouth. We don't know what to expect. So the performance had been going down since from after the AFCON 2019. Yeah, we were in the race, but things were not really lining up. Now, it's not the firing of Wuro that is the issue. It's the mess we made of it. If you're going to fire a coach, it must be because you already have something lined up. Don't fire a coach. Don't put the team in that kind of a limbo. And then you start debating, do we hire a foreign coach? Do we bring in interim? Do we confirm Guavon, who Otite mentioned earlier on, whose best active years was some 15 years ago. And of course, when we went into into the AFCON, Guavon was told he went in as an interim manager. And they already gone and contacted Passero, and they were flaunting him as the next manager to be hired. And then we had these three great matches at AFCON. We can analyze those three matches. Yeah, we played so well. We rose to the occasion. But we were not thinking long term. And all of a sudden, we decided we're going to change. We're going to bring all these local coaches together, call them a consortium or whatever. And then they were going to go ahead to tinker the qualification, the last match. For me, it's not the issue of firing Raw, it's the issue of what was done. We didn't have a plan. Now, let's look at the two other countries that we can use as an example. Ghana fired their coach. Ghana, Milo, if we're celebrating Raw, Milo did so much for Ghana. I mean, even their qualification, he was the one who revived it for them. They went to get him to revive their World Cup qualifier. Was the one who revived it, but as soon as they realized it was taking them nowhere, they fired him. But it's not just the firing, it's what they did after they fired him. They put together a quality technical crew. Cameroon fired their coach. It wasn't just the firing, it was what they did after. They put together a solid bench. But what we did was criminal. Because we fired the coach and without dancing, are we going to hire a new coach, a new manager? Are we going to confirm Guavon as the coach or not? We didn't have a plan. That's what it means. So it's not the firing of the coach that is the issue here. It's what we did after. We did not plan for life after him, and we paid a very high price for it.
Wow. So it's not so much about the coach. Well, I was of that opinion. And I think you've alluded to that in different forums about the timing as well too of the firing. But again, we could make the same argument for Ghana and Cameroon, but they're in the World Cup and we're not. Now, let's look at the game itself. That's Ghana and Ghana over the two legs, both in Kumasi and in Abuja. Dafe, what do you think the Ghanaian did right? Because to be honest, it wasn't like Ghana they were without their problems. I knew about their problems getting the coaches that we mentioned. That's Otto Addo and Chris Hilton. The sport ministry wanted Chris Hilton, but the GFA wanted Otto Addo. So what was your impression of Ghana? Was it a case of the better of the two devils just going through, because they had their problems too?
Well, there's one thing. When you look at African representatives at the World Cup. There are 10 very good teams. And of those 10 very good teams, 5 have got to fail. Because when you start counting Algeria, Ghana, Morocco, Egypt, Cameroon, Mali, Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, Tunisia, there are always going to be failures, or there are always going to be tears, if you like. So it's down to who wants it the best, who prepares for it the best. And again, from what I said previously, we were beaten not by the players on the pitch. We were beaten tactically by the dugout. The Ghanaian technical crew, they studied how we play. They set about stopping us from playing our game, and it worked for them. We, in the first half of our home game, so the second game, we were playing pretty well, but we got hit by a sucker punch, that Thomas Partey goal. And then when the teams came out in the second half, Ghana changed their formation, they changed their tactics, it became containment now. And we were unable to respond to that change in requirements on the pitch. So we were not beaten because Ghana had a better team. We were beaten because Ghana had a better technical crew in the dugouts who were making changes and responding to events on the pitch. We just could not respond to anything. All we did was keep on doing the same thing that we've done that has failed. It failed us in Ghana. It failed us against Tunisia. And it failed us against Algeria all that 3 years ago.
And to add to what you said, the proverbial definition of madness is when you keep on doing the same thing, you know, and you won't change.
Expecting a different result. Yes.
Expecting a different result. Yeah. So, Bolaji, now, looking at the game itself, would you say, I mean, I know we missed Ndidi, but I would have thought we had enough personnel to be able to prosecute the fixture over 2 legs. So would you say there's a personnel issue, or majorly the fall from the dugout?
I will never, never say it's a personnel issue. I know many countries who will kill themselves to have the lineup we have. I mean, we don't have, I won't blow them out of proportion, but when you have someone like Osimhen, you have someone like Iheanacho, you have someone like Moses Simon, you have Dennis, I mean, they may not be the best, okay? But these guys in their league, they are causing people to look at them. If you mention any of these names in the English league, they are known. So we have the personnel. If you put the Ghanaian team and ours, we have, even the Ghanaians themselves acknowledge that we have the better team. Now, I think the problem here is we rely on these names. We built this confidence that as long as these guys are on the field, something will happen. Oh no, it doesn't work that way. You have to give them a plan, a tactics, a game strategy that allows them to put this ability to use. In the last 10 minutes, we unleashed 5 attackers on the field. That was madness. They would just be they were there to run around headless chickens. No, it doesn't work that way. What Ghana did, a technically sound bench will make a team of 11 Maradonas look stupid, because you can contain 11 Maradonas if you apply the right strategy. So it's when we went to Ghana with a team that paraded what we have in the attack, how many chances did we have in Kumasi? I think we had only 1 or 2. That is not acceptable for a team that lined up the kind of firepower we are. That's an alarm there. The Tunisian game, we hustle, we'll puff. We did all the running on the wings. It looked like we were attacking, but how many shots did we actually have on goal? And so it looks, we will do all this huffing on the side. Boom, 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 boom. Nothing comes to the middle. You hardly see the keeper troubled. And when the ball comes to the middle, it's just somewhat a ball that's just sent in. And of course, you have tall defenders and they are thanking their stars that the ball is coming the way it's coming, because it's all they need to do, just head it away. And so we didn't have that clear strategy that allows the boys to make the best of their ability. When you see your striker now coming into the middle and he starts fighting to get the ball, you know something is wrong. I hate seeing strikers start to wrestle to get the ball to do something. That is trouble. That just tells you it's not
working. He's not getting service.
Yeah, that just tells you it is not working. When a striker has to run like a crazed animal to chase a ball down, it is not working. No, a striker should see the goal that was disallowed in Abuja, the second goal that was disallowed, that was the only chance I would say we created in the two games. In 180 minutes, that was the only chance that a striker will say, look back and thank you for. That was the only chance we created. The rest of it was just, we were just buzzing, boom, 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 trying to look busy. It looks good on the fans. The fan thinks we are going somewhere, but you ask yourself, where does it end? All this rush. And it's taking away the energy. All those runs, it's sapping you. By 78 minutes, the boys were done. And I'm not surprised, because we were just running. We just unleashed them, but there was no clear strategy how to get it done. We had the personnel. But like Otite said earlier on, it was a case of what is the strategy? We failed. We failed because we didn't have a proper strategy. We failed from on the bench. I'm sorry to say this because I have friends on that bench, but that is where it came from. We just couldn't make the best of what we had on the field.
The bench themselves, they will acknowledge that they failed the players.
I hope.
Tafe, talking about the aftermath of the game, there were queries meted out to the NFL board, from the public, from some cross-section of the media. You know, we saw a video that went viral after the game had finished. Obviously, that was the interview the NFL chairman, president, Ahmad Chopini, granted gentlemen of the press, gentlemen and women of the press, regarding the must that we have to be, the fact that we have to be in Qatar, that it's non-negotiable, you know. And a Ghanaian friend tweeted to me that this is part of the arrogance that I was talking about, that he felt made Nigeria lost to Ghana. Now, in the light of that, what do you think should be happening to the NFF board? Particularly when you consider that the Algerian FA president resigned.
Well, again, you have to look at the Nigerian psyche. The Nigerian psyche is not to give up, is not to resign. The NFF board, the president of the NFF is a politician. He's not a football person, he's a politician. He got there based on politics. And since he has been there, he has been making moves to improve himself. But when you look back at from 2016 coming, all of our teams, one by one, are being dismantled. Our under 17, we don't have a coach. Under 20, we don't have a coach. Under 23, we don't have a coach. Under our Super Falcons coach is working without a contract. Egwavon was working without a contract.
We can argue that Egwavon is an employee of...
He's an employee, but he should have a clause on his to say, right, you're doing for this fixed period, you're doing this. And there was talk that he had a 2.5-year contract that was on his desk, which had gone unsigned by both and which was withdrawn later. But coming back to what should happen with the NFF, I have always been a critic of the current NFF. The current NFF have taken our football from the doldrums of 2016 up to where fans have started believing that we can do something, and now we're back at the edge of those doldrums again. the current NFF have not been able to move us forward. They have been negligent. They have been incompetent. And they have just been spewing hot air rather than actually putting things in place to move our football forward. They're actually removing all those building blocks one by one, and we're teetering on the edge of where we were between 2013 and 2015 before we sort of arrested it. So I'm afraid this, our current board, we're not going to go anywhere with them. As far as I'm concerned, you fail in your job, you fail in every marker that's been given to you. You said the qualification for Qatar is non-negotiable. You then decided to carry out certain moves that made that non-negotiable target unachievable. So there's no other thing for me to say but to ask them to step down honorably, do the honorable thing. But again, we're Nigerians. Nigerians do not give up. Nigerians do not resign. Never a Nigerian politician who has resigned because he was incompetent or because he was negligent.
Right, Fology. The game itself also at the end of the game, there was some ugly incidents which sort of marred the game, the football game itself, which was the fans rushing onto the field, causing all sort of destruction, mayhem at the end of the game. What do you make of the situation, the ugly incident?
No one condones violence. That was an ugly scene out there. You cannot rationalize it in any way. But for everything that happens, that's always a cause. When they threw open everything and threw caution to the wind in order to get people in, they got in all manner of people. And that's the first sign of danger. There's a reason why football body or worldwide decided they were no longer going to have standing terraces. Everything was going to be people sitting down, seat numbered, tickets sold with markers to you be able to trace who holds a ticket. It's to be able to account for everybody who is inside the stadium, just like you will account for everyone on a passenger on a plane, on a train, or anything. We live in an age of accountability. All of that was thrown to the wind, okay? You overfilled the stadium. That's the first recipe for disaster. You brought in everybody. You didn't vet who comes in. You threw the ticket open in the name of generating people to come in. You're looking for danger. You're looking for disaster. Sometimes I think as a nation, we don't respect history. Because if we respect history, we've been in the past where things have not gone right and the fans have. And we need to ask ourselves, what led to it? What was the role of the security people? Where were they? I don't think we had security people in the stadium that day who had any knowledge of crowd control. Because I was shocked how that much people got in. And you look in the crowd, you can't see the presence of the... Were there wardens on around that day? I don't know. You just can't see. All you just saw was just one tear gas that was thrown on there. So we were negligent. The people who organized that match, everything, they were negligent about it. It's one thing to bring 80,000 into a place that was supposed to be 60,000. At that point in time, I think you're looking for trouble. And we got our... We can just be thankful. Somebody died. We don't know the circumstances, but I would have wished none of that happened. We would have been able to lick our wounds without that sad incident. But we need to be wary of these things. We can't just be careless when it comes to crowd control. Our security agencies also need to improve their ability to cope with crowd.
Yeah, if I just add something to that, if we look back to the Olympics in London 2012, there was an issue with not enough people coming into the venues for the sports. What did the British Olympic Committee do? They gave out free tickets, but those free tickets were given to armed forces personnel. They were given to school students. They were given to people who could be traced. You had to register with somewhere, whether you're registered in your school, you're registered with the army, you're registered with the medic corps. But the key thing is what Bolaji just hit the nail on the head. You knew exactly who was in the stadium. You can't just open the stadium to anybody and everybody, because God forbid they give a terrorist a ticket to get in there, or two or three or 20. And then we end up with a monumental disaster that it'd be very difficult to come away with from.
Right. So moving forward now, as we begin to round up, Bolaji, what would you, I know these are the sort of questions that keeps coming over and over. What would you expect to see in the light of Super Eagles, considering the fact that, okay, well, we're not going to the World Cup, but the good thing is the World Cup is this year. You know, previously, the qualifiers would have ended the year before, and you still have to wait some longer months before the World Cup, but at least for the sanity of Nigerian fans, the World Cup is this year in December, so at least we can get that over and done with. There'll be AFCON. But in the meantime, the Super Eagles is without a technical crew. They've been dissolved, as it were. What should we be doing? I'm not going to say, or what should you be expecting to see, even though we know whatever you should be seeing would have little or no impact. But what should we be expecting to see in terms of the coaching crew? Should it be local, or should it be another foreigner, or should it be a mix?
thank you, Diola. We need to start to plan for the future. It's done. We've lost. We're not going to Qatar. That's done with. But there's the AFCON qualifier coming up, and it's coming just around the corner. You may say July, but July is around the corner. We need to get in a new technical crew. Now, there's always this division, this dichotomy of foreign base or local. I don't care where the coach is coming. Just getting a team of people who are good enough, who have a track record. You don't have to go and get a Guardiola or a Mourinho. There are many, many coaches out there with good records that you can verify, that can put a team together and make the best of the talents we have. We need to get a team in place. Preferably, I would like someone who comes in, a mixture, both foreign and local. They need someone to guide them around. And also, we also need to begin to also look towards our league. I'm not one of those shouting, you must invite local players. There's a reason our league is in a state where you can't. A local player today becomes international player tomorrow. Foreign player tomorrow. So that would hold water for me as well. If you're good enough, improve yourself, do the right thing. But getting the best players, we need to put in. We have a team, okay? We have a core of players. That's what I mean. We have a core of players. We are not short of that. If we have to play a match today, we will still get decent players. But we need a proper technical crew, and we need a solid federation behind them. No, we don't want the federation where somebody is there just running the team as if the team is his own pet project. We need a federation that is less visible, allow the teams to do what they are doing. The nonsense that happened in AFCON where the team was playing and they brought in all manner of individuals into the dressing room, those things should be cut out. Those sort of distractions should be cut out. If you want to donate or whatever to the Eagles, go to the NFA Secretariat. They have an advert or whatever, the economic or whatever department. Go there and do that. Let them host that in all that noise. Let them do it in the NFA office. Let them hold the press conference there. Leave the dressing room alone. All those nonsense need to stop. A proper team, a proper coaching crew, a proper federation behind them. Everybody knowing what they are supposed to be doing. No one infringing upon the other. Everybody accountable to one another going forward.
Yeah, I have to concur. I have to concur because whether local coach, foreign coach, all we need is a competent coach. Yeah. We don't care where they come from. It could be Togolese, it could be Moroccan, it could be from Ogbomoso, it could be from London, it could be from anywhere. As long as the person is competent and merit-based. Like you said, check these people's track record. They're there to see. We have a core of maybe 36 regulars with our Super Eagles. And those 36 regulars, most of them play in Premier Leagues across Europe. Those players, all they need is structure, discipline, structure, and instructions. That's all. I mean, what did Raw do? All he did, he's not really a coach per se. He's more a team manager. Yeah. Get the right things in place. Get your squad call up. Tell the players, make sure you arrive on Monday. You don't arrive by Wednesday, you're not playing. It's those simple things puts the building blocks in place. So yeah, like Bolaji said, we don't care. Local, foreign, as long as the person is competent and we can check that person's competence, and that person needs to be in soon, because like we said, we're now in April, May, June, July, 3 months' time, we've got AFCON qualifiers to play. So this is urgent. And then between now and the World Cup, there's talk of maybe a few friendlies coming up against teams that are going to the World Cup. They'll be useful to us, but only if we have a decent structure in place in order to execute and gain from these matches. So it's urgent. There's no rest in football. Once we're already in April, before you know it, we're in May, and then we need to start drawing up a squad list for AFCON qualifiers. So it's very, very urgent at this time.
Very urgent at this time. And as we begin to round off, just on a final note, the World Cup is here. Ghana is in the same group as Europe, in Portugal and South Korea. Now, I don't want to rub some oil into the pain that we are going through at the moment. Are you going to be watching the World Cup, Bolaji?
I will. I mean, I used to say to myself, I said before we started qualifying, we used to watch World Cup. Brazil was our team. So I just have to revert to the status quo. Ireland is not there as well, so I suppose it's double tragedy for me. No, I'll be watching the World Cup, definitely. World Cup was before Nigeria started qualifying, so yeah, I look forward to seeing African teams represent us well. One particular match I look forward to is Ghana, Uruguay, yeah.
Grudge match.
Sorry, I suppose they are in the same group, right?
Yeah, in the same group. That's a grudge match.
Yeah, it's a grudge match. That's. I hope the Ghanaians, the boys, know the history. That's another thing. It's another thing to know the history. Because if you know the history, I'm sure the I understand Suarez will be playing. And I hope they give him some due. Even if they're not going to win, let them remember. We did not forget.
And Dafe, you are a Nigerian thoroughly bred. You probably might not even bother. So what's your view?
Again, I will watch just as a spectator, not as a football fan. I mean, like Bolaji said, back in the 1980s, I think the first World Cup I actively watched was 1978, the one that Argentina won. And then I watched 82 World Cup, I watched 86 World Cup. At that time, my two teams were Brazil and France. Even though I have some sort of English connection, I just didn't have any affinity for the team. But France with Tigana, France with those players, they were one of my teams. So I'll watch as a spectator, not really as a fan. If I catch a match on the TV, I'll catch it. There are very few matches out there that I will actually go out of my way to watch.
Right. And on that note, as we've discussed the Super Eagles, it's always a wonderful privilege talking to Dafe and Bolaji on Sports Africana. And we hope that when next we'll be talking, it should be good news regarding our dear Super Eagles. And until we come your way again, when we talk about another interesting action. And for our fans, we're going to be talking about the backstory, how Ghana ensured that Nigeria did not pull out. I'll be talking to some eminent persons within the Ghanaian fraternity. So please watch out for that. And until we come your way again, we'll come with another interesting edition. Have a wonderful day and stay blessed.